John Tilly. My Radio 1.
In this special edition of our My Radio 1 series, we pay tribute to a much-loved broadcaster who made a unique and trailblazing contribution to the network between 1982 and 1987. A lady who we sadly lost on Christmas Day 2021, a tragedy felt by her devoted listeners, the radio industry and the music business in equal measure.
Janice Long!
Tonight on Radio 1, a brand new show with me, Janice Long, and this lot, A Flock of Seagulls. Dislocation Dance are doing a session too. Mark my words, we'll be popping in with a look at what's happening. There's a really tough competition and great music for a great night. Be here between 7.30 and 10. Radio 1 with me, Janice Long.
Saturday nights are made for music.
Janice's BBC career began back home in Liverpool.
I started at Radio Merseyside behind the scenes. I was a station assistant, which was quite technical, editing, driving desks, plugging jack fields, that kind of thing. But there was a guy at Radio Merseyside called Reg Brooks, who encouraged me to go on the air, and he got me to read short stories by local writers. It was a programme called First Heard. And from there, they asked me to start doing other bits and pieces. And I remember they gave me a Saturday morning kids programme, which at the time was very sort of kind of brownies, Boy Scouts kind of vibe to it. And I changed it and turned it into more of a music programme. And I remember Gary Newman's Tubeway Army down in the park was my first record of the week. And from there, I did a Sunday lunchtime children's programme as well.
Much more music.
And then I came up with an idea to do a programme called Street Life, which I'd so into local music, Liverpool, all kinds of music, but there was a big scene in Liverpool, and I'd gone to Eric's, and I decided to approach the boss and said, I think it'd be a really good idea to have a programme where we could combine fantastic new music sessions and have interviews, relevant interviews as well. And he said, well, who will we get to present it? And I said, well, I was having a think. And he said, well, there's only you. Only you can do it because you know what you're talking about. So that programme started. It had a budget of £10, I think, but managed to bring in all kinds of bands and do sessions. And the programme became quite a sort of cult thing.
1485, number one for news, information, sport and music.
Non-stop entertainment with Janice Long.
And then they asked me if I would do the afternoon show, which I did. And on one of those shows, my guest was Paul Gambaccini. And I interviewed him. And without me knowing, he went down to London and said to Radio 1, I think you should check this girl out for Radio 1, because they were looking for new DJs. And so apparently they came up to Liverpool and they listened to him in the Holiday Inn across the road from Radio Merseyside, invited me out for dinner under the pretense, you know, that they were just thinking, you know, how good is Liverpool in terms of music and, you know, what could we be doing from here and what have you. And then the next day I was doing the afternoon show and the phone went, the ex-directory line in the studio, and I answered it, and this bloke said, hello, Derek Chinnery here, who was the controller of Radio 1. And I told him where to go because I thought it was a mate messing around. And he said, can you just put a long record on? Well, the only thing I could find that was long was Benny and the Jets by Elton John. So I put that track on and he said, I need an answer now, yes or no. Would you like to join Radio 1? And I said, what? He said, well, I need to know because we're going to press with it really quickly and you'll be starting things like the week after next. And I went, yes, oh, okay. And as soon as it came off air, I went to see my programme controller, Ian Judson, who was a wonderful man. And he said, well, I think you should take it. But you see, I was staff at Radio Merseyside. And, you know, I could have gone on and had, you know, maybe be running my own station or whatever. But he said, I'm going to act on your behalf. So what he did to Radio 1, they wanted to do a six-month contract, which he was like, no way, it's got to be at least a year, and I wanted to earn X amount of pounds. And then I had to go to Manchester to meet my producer, who was John Leonard, and I was doing a Saturday evening show from 7.30 until 10 o'clock. And I remember doing my very first show. I'd put on some skinny jeans, some Chelsea boots and a great big jumper, and I wished I hadn't, because all I did throughout that first show was sweat like an absolute pig.
Janice Long.
Hello and welcome to the show. It's great to be here. Hope you'll be around until 10 o'clock. Seagulls and I Ran, that's the one that went to number 9 in the American charts, and I have it on good authority that that one is going to be re-released over here as the follow-up to Wishing. They mention Aurora Borealis in that particular song, which happens to be one of my favourites of A Flock of Seagulls, and I actually saw that once before I got into radio. I used to be an air hostess, and I went up onto a flight deck once when we were travelling to Toronto, and you could actually see the Aurora Borealis, one of the most incredible sights I've ever seen in my life.
I did my shows from Manchester for a while, and then they started getting me down to London to Depp on Drive Time for Peter Powell, and that was a great experience. I loved doing that because I used to stay in the Columbia Hotel, which was a band hotel, so I would be down in London with the likes of, I don't know, Frankie Goes to Hollywood, U2, Psychedelic Furs, Depeche Mode, all of these people all staying in the same hotel.
We are looking for smart young people to participate in a British Broadcasting Corporation radio programme. We would like you to talk about yourselves and answer a simple question for which you could win a prize. Suitable applicants should write to Janice Long, select a disc, Radio 1, London W1A4WW.
Apart from dear old Annie Nightingale, it was a very male-dominated Radio 1 in those days, wasn't it?
Well, there was only Annie, and I always remember meeting Annie in the toilet at Radio 1 and her saying to me, thank God another woman and a fellow Aries. But it was a very strange place, Radio 1 in those days. I walked in expecting it to be so funky, you know, I just thought this place is going to be amazing. And I got my dad leopard skin hair or whatever and my black leather frock on and my high heels and my fishnet tights. And I walked in and it was like an insurance office, but like an old-fashioned insurance office. And all of the only females were all in the typing pool. Doreen Davis was one of the bosses. I can't remember her exact title. Obviously, she was a woman. There were no female producers at all. It was male. And Annie, I hardly ever saw because she did her Sunday night show. So yes, it was just me and obviously the first woman to do Top of the Pops as well.
Janice Long. Janice,
hello.
Welcome to Top of the Pops.
Thank you very much indeed. Enjoying myself.
You're from where?
I'm from Liverpool. Anyway, I hope you've all had a marvellous time, particularly yesterday when all of the presents were being doled out. I had a great time because we had the Christmas lunch yesterday with Mike Reed, and that was smashing. We got all sorts of presents and things then I zoomed off, did Top of the Pops, and then zoomed up to Liverpool and spent Christmas with the family and had a great time. Got loads of presents, like a leather dress and a camera and some jumpers and a really snazzy handbag. It was great. Then this morning I had to come back down here to do this, and I'm really enjoying that as well. In the show today, every other one is an old one, and that all my favourites.
Right, so the summer of 1984, the kid, David Jensen, departs the evening show, and it was also decided that Peter Powell was quitting the Tea Time programme to head to the weekends, and that was the gig that you were initially offered.
I said, no, I would rather do the 7.30 till 10 slot because the music was more suited to what I liked, and I had a choice and I could pick sessions, pick bands. I would go to gigs after the show. So that was exactly, you know, the show I wanted.
Time, Radio 1 with Janice Long.
How are you doing? Welcome to a show with taste, good music tonight. Go back to 78 for Radio. Take it away, Elvis.
I had a regular contributor called John Walters, who was John Peel's producer, who did Walters Week, and that was just hilarious.
I went in my building society, and I want to, you know, like, get some money out. I'm telling you, I'm going to get some money. And I saw on the counter, like, a little, what they call Henry's Cat. Have you, is there something
yes.
called cartoon, Henry's
yeah.
Cat? Henry's Cat, little...
Kenneth Williams, is it Kenneth Williams does the voice? I don't know.
Oh, I have no idea, I don't. But Henry's Cat exists as a children's cartoon. Henry's Cat is holding up a little tin that says, I'm with the... which I can't advertise by saying. So I looked and I thought, oh... Well, I said to the woman, as she's giving me the money, like, you know, and I said, I said, incidentally, how do I get one of those little yellow cats? I'd like that little yellow cat with his little tin. So she says, oh, no, to do that, you've got to open a child's account. So she's giving the money, 5,000, 6,000, you know. I said, oh, yeah? So I said, in other words, you're saying, like, I've got to have a child? So she says, yes, of course, you've got to open a child's account. So I thought, oh, I can't go home at this time. And I thought it's bound to take about 9 months, even if we hit it off first time. And I thought, I want that little yellow cat. So anyway, I went back yesterday and I just said, I was a bit vague. I just said, I'd like to open an account for my little loved one, you know. And, yes, and they get me a form and all that sort of thing. So anyway, I sort of filled in all my stuff. You see, I just fill it all in. And because she says, name. And I thought, well, his name is Mitchum. Only because, I'll tell you why, because when Peel was starting to talk about having children years and years ago, and he says, I shall call this child Anfield after the Liverpool football ground. I said, you can't do that. And I used to go to Crystal Palace. I said, right, I'd got this cat at the time, and I said, I'm going to call him Sellhurst after Sellhurst Park. But then people thought he was called after Sellhurst Station. And when we got another cat and he got run over, somebody said, oh, that's called something else, Hackbridge. And then this one, who we've had for years, it came along, and everybody called him Mitchum Junction, you see, and he was always known as the next station. So he's known as Mitchum, and so they said, oh, Mitchum, and so they put Master Mitchum, so-and-so, you see. And I put £10. I said, I'll put £10 in for my little... I've got a queue forming behind me. I didn't realise it would take so long. And but eventually, so they must have thought, because she comes up after about 10 minutes of all this, yes, and where's his Master Mitchum? What's his birthday? So I had to give her a birthday, you see, as far as she puts it all. They'll send him a card now. So she comes up and she says, you'll have to come to the side window or we can't pass it through. And all the people in the queue who didn't know what was happening, they must have thought I've got like bags of Deutschmarks or something coming out. She comes out, opens the door, and here it comes, this little yellow... It's a little money box. So I got that, and here's his book. There's his book with his name and everything in it. So you can have a look. But all I'm saying is my cat is now in the... he must be the only cat in the country who's in a building society. But I had to do him to get the little yellow cat.
And both of us will be crying by the end of it, and everyone who was listening as well. That was a real high spot. But so many people... I mean, Morrissey, obviously, Ian McCulloch, Jagger...
Do you still listen to music?
No, I never listen to music, Janice.
I bet you do. What do you listen to?
Well, I listen to everything, you know. I'm sort of, I'm a bit of a radio freak, and I spend a lot of time in New York, and I'm a real radio freak, and I'm a 12-inch freak. Now, what are you laughing at?
Rod Stewart, and I always remember him coming in, and the producer at the time wanted to do a sort of chronological interview. So, you know, hey, Rod, in 19 whatever you did there, and then Rod. And I actually said to the producer, I'm going to find this incredibly difficult. It's not my style. And this was halfway through the interview. And Rod agreed. He said, well, I don't feel happy doing it like this. So the producer said, fine, just do it. So we started, and we ran out of studio time. And Rod Stewart said to me, oh, it doesn't matter, I'll come back tomorrow. I said, you're joking. He said, no, honestly, I really don't mind. I'm enjoying it. I will come back tomorrow. He said, but I'll get off now. And before I do, can you just show me where John Walters' office is, the producer of John Peel? And I said, yeah, by all means. He said, I just want to thank John Walters, because without him, I wouldn't be where I am today.
Do you think of yourself as being sexy?
I can turn it on if I want.
No, but do you think you are?
No, I don't think so. No, not really.
I mean, I remember when I went to see you at the Apollo and you were wiggling your bum like mad. Mm. I mean, when you're doing that, do you think, hey, I'm wiggling my bum and, you know, everybody's going to think that I look great? Or do you think it's funny?
It really is the music that makes me do that. I don't do that for effect. I just really get carried away up there. It's not done to please a female audience. I mean, I think I've always done that. I've always moved my bottom first to the music. And getting back to the other question, you know, listen, I see myself with nothing on in a mirror, and I know I'm not a sex symbol, OK?
Tell us about it.
There isn't anything to tell. Short story, that would be.
And it was being part of that Nighttime Radio 1 setup that meant that you and Peel... Well, you had the most wonderful relationship on and off the air.
Well, John and I were great mates because we were the only two people in the building. Everybody gone home, just John and I. And we used to have such a laugh, and doing Top of the Pops as well. But we did a week of shows from Shibuya in Japan, and we both hated the jingles because it was Janice and John in Japan. But we had a great time. And that was really revealing all of the stuff that we did over there in terms of their culture and how different it was. And also, we had live music from the Yamaha shop. So that was a great experience. I always remember him saying to me that if he could, he'd sack everybody at Radio 1 apart from me. And apart from Bruno Brooks, who he put on reception, because he quite liked Bruno. But we had a wonderful night where he's a big fan, he was a big fan of Sheena Easton. And so it was decided that we could get Sheena Easton in the building. She could hide under my desk until he arrived, and then we'd surprise him. And I'll never forget his face when Sheena Easton walked into the studio. But, yeah, we were very close.
You know that I had him on my bedroom wall.
That seems to indicate a degree of agility I didn't believe you're capable of, Janice, I must say. Top 10 video.
That legendary reaction from John Peel after Janice back announced David Cassidy on Top of the Pops. And naturally, she became a popular host of The Roadshow, making her debut on the North Wales coast during the summer of 84. Now, the following year, she fronted the whole Welsh week, as she told Smiley Miley, Gary Davis, Mike Reed and myself recently.
My Radio 1 Roadshow in Wales.
Hello, Smiley, Gary, Mike and Sean.
Hello, welcome to the Radio 1 Roadshow.
So my first one was in North Wales. And yeah, it was very, very exciting. I loved every single moment of it.
Radio 1 Roadshow. The right time.
Today, live from the Gaiety Theatre Rill with Janice Long!
All of the male DJs had a uniform, which was a white shirt with those epaulets on, and they made me wear one, and I said, it's blinking awful, that. Anyway, I persevered wearing the thing and feeling ridiculous, and it was only when we got back and we had a deep briefing, you know, how'd it go, da-dum, da-dum. And it was suggested that maybe they get me a little tennis dress. I said, no, I'm not doing that. I'll just wear my own clothes. But the crowd were just unbelievable. They really loved the Radio 1 Roadshow. And obviously, if it was great weather, it was a great experience.
Come on, music, this is Tom Jones. And it's not unusual.
Loved Pwllheli, always liked it there, and we did it in Butlins in Pwllheli. I remember going, I love cricket, and there was a gorgeous restaurant there, and stayed in a hotel there, which was very posh. I sort of got used to the lifestyle of staying in these places. And at Tenby, I had never, ever seen so many people in my life. As far as the eye could see, there were crowds. It was phenomenal and very welcoming as ever, and all looking forward to, you know, bits and pieces and what have you. I mean, it just became such an event.
It's on to bits and pieces, and in front of me I have four contestants, two on my left and two on my right.
And then we went off to Porthcawl, which actually Smash Hits covered, so they had a day in the life of Janice Long on the Radio 1 Roadshow. And they just took photographs of absolutely everything, including a guy who worked at Radio Wales, BBC Radio Wales, up until recently. And he's in Smash Hits in his dinky little shorts, but he was one of the sound engineers on that particular roadshow. And I was very excited because Gene Loves Jezebel were playing live. But yeah, great, great memories, and I'll never forget them.
The Radio 1 Roadshow.
Today, live from Salt Lake Car Park, Porthcawl, with Janice Long!
The Radio 1 Roadshow continues in a moment. I'm going to get out into the audience and find some interesting people to chat to. This is Denise LaSalle and my tutu.
Janice sharing her memories of visiting the Welsh coast with Smiley Miley, Gary Davis, Mike Reed and myself on the recent programme My Radio 1 Roadshow in Wales. And obviously we had no idea at the time that that would turn out to be her final broadcast.
My Radio 1, Sean Tilly.
And next, she recalls her role in a monumental event during the summer of 1985.
Live Aid from London, around the world. Live Aid from London, with BBC TV and Radio 1.
Rob Geldof had asked me to do it a wee while before, and there's that, well, for me, an iconic picture of Live Aid, where I'm on the pitch, you know, promoting the whole event with Adam Ant, Elton John, Bob Geldof, Midge, Tony Hadley, other people on there. And just me in my bright pink suit. But that was such a wonderful thing to be a part of. And I remember getting there incredibly early in the morning, and George Michael's sister, she did my hair for me. And I bought her an outfit especially from a fashion college in London. And we were all, you know, told what we were doing and where we would have to be standing and what have you. And it was almost I was standing on the stage watching people arrive, and there were little dots in the distance at Wembley, and then they got bigger and bigger and bigger, and you saw them with the hampers and bags full of, you know, pop and what have you, all trying to get to the front for this momentous occasion. And then it was time for the whole event to start, and I was standing at the side of the stage slightly nervous, because they had said to me, if status quo, if it doesn't work, you have to go on. And I thought, I go on and do what? Tap dance, tell a joke, what do I do to fill why this sort of developed? Fortunately, it was Richard Skinner who said, Live Aid. And then you heard do-do-do-do-do, and it was status quo. And Tony Hadley was standing beside me, and we just looked at each other and we burst into tears, because it was just, you know, the build-up to the whole thing.
And backstage, I hope, Janis Long is there with the stars. Janis.
Hello, Richard. Actually, I'm not on stage. You can see I'm behind the scenes here at Wembley. But I was on stage right at the beginning, and it was the most wonderful feeling ever. I was with Tony Hadley from Spandau Ballet, and we watched Status Quo fire past, and then of course the guards who went on stage to play the national anthem. And as soon as they started rocking all over the world, everybody, crew, all the guys who were sort of shifting all of the gear and everything, we just stood there and everybody just looked at each other and almost started crying. Everybody was choked. So the atmosphere here is absolutely wonderful. It's going to be a great day. I mean, the weather couldn't be better. All sorts of things, of course, will be happening. I was here right at the very, very beginning of the whole event, and the most exciting thing that happened was that somebody, they opened the doors, one person ran on the pitch, then another person ran on the pitch, then another person, and before you knew it, the stadium was filled with 72,000 people.
After Wembley, I went to the club in Mayfair, where we were watching it in Philadelphia, but also filming everything that was going on inside this club. We had various guests, and I had to interview them, and I didn't finish until 5 in the morning.
Hello, I'm Janis Long, and in the series I'm chatting away to girls who've been successful with their music, and we're talking about all sorts of things.
Who's That Girl was an idea I had for doing a programme about women in the music industry, which shows you how different it was then, because of that necessity to go, look, there are women making it. And we used Eurythmics' Who's That Girl for the theme tune, and I think many of us did a series of 6.
Now this week, it's a girl who originally came to prominence as one half of an electro duo formed as a result of a split within Depeche Mode. Well, this week it's Alison Alf Moyet. Well, it's a year ago since Yazoo dissolved. Were you ever scared of giving that up? Because, I mean, it was something that was very successful.
Very scared, yeah, but there really wasn't any choice left, because, I mean, the musical differences between me and Vince were, you know, I know that's the old story, but they were quite phenomenal, and it just wasn't workable at all anymore. And besides which, we were getting a bit stale, we were becoming like a parody of ourselves, you know, and it was just time to go on. There wasn't any other thing to do.
Well, Alison Moyet is always just the most wonderful guest. She's always interesting and opinionated, and I always thought very interesting at the time, because there was nobody like Alison Moyet, and, you know, she was getting a lot of flack. You know, who is she? Isn't she a big girl? That kind of thing. I'll tell you a story about, I was going over to the States. We were flying to Madison, Wisconsin, and that was for Who's That Girl? Alana Curry and Chrissy Hynde were the two people I were going to do. Alana, the Thompson Twins were on tour, and they were doing a gig in Wisconsin that night. And so we were flying to Chicago, and then getting a connecting flight to Madison, Wisconsin. And the flight, because I used to be an air stewardess, and I suddenly thought, this is really strange. This flight is taking longer than half an hour, and I've not heard any change in the engine, because you get used to the noise when you're a stewardess, you see. So
we had the captain came on. He said, hey, there's snow, so we're going to go over to Milwaukee instead. So then he goes, we can't go to Milwaukee. And then all of a sudden he went, oh, my God. And it was like a scene out of Airplane. And I had a plugger on one side of me. And just to describe the plugger, he was a very macho guy with the gold rings, you know, the sovereign rings and what have you. And then my producer, who was always saying to me, Phil, I like a bit of turbulence. It livened things up. Well, he got more than turbulence. We were stuck in a tornado. And just like Airplane, all of the lockers started opening. There were babies crying. There were priests crossing themselves. There were nuns praying. It was like all of life was on this train. A trolley was going backwards and forwards. And it was absolutely terrifying. The sky one minute was, you know, bright light, and then it plunged into darkness. We went up, we went down, and the plugger was crying and praying. And I could hear him really going, dear God, forgive me. And my producer was crying and holding on to me. And the only thing I had to keep me going, and I remained remarkably calm, I had Ocean Rain by Echo and the Bunnymen, which remains, you know, one of my favourite albums to this day. And The Killing Moon. So The Killing Moon always reminds me of that trip for Radio 1 for two parts of Who's That Girl. And then after doing Alana, because they were caught in the same thing on a tour bus, but they were a lot safer than we were. But we saw the papers, like whole churches flying through the air and stuff. It was just terrifying. And then we had to go to New York to do Chrissy Hynde, but the plugger decided to get back home because he never wanted to fly again. He knew if he didn't get on a plane then, he never would.
So what was it about London that fascinated you? I mean, why not Rome or Paris?
Because I spoke English, so I thought at least if I'm going to be in a different country and I don't know anybody, at least that's some kind of starting point. Or I thought I spoke English till I got there. Then I found out I couldn't speak English.
How do you save money?
Yeah, I had about $500.
Were you disillusioned in any way when you first got there, or did it live up to the expectations?
Well, Tie a Yellow Ribbon Round the Old Oak Tree was number one in the charts when I got there.
I loved doing all of the documentaries, Incest, The Best Kept Secret. I loved doing a documentary about the homeless where I spent a night on the streets with homeless people. And I also loved doing the documentary about because I fronted the AIDS campaign for the BBC and did the telly with Ian Dury. And I also did the radio. And I loved doing all of that sort of community broadcasting, do you know what I mean?
Since February 1985, all Factor VIII has been heat-treated, which kills the virus completely.
The bad news is that over 1,000 haemophiliacs in Britain were infected with the virus before that date.
And the good news is that since then, that number has hardly changed. What's more, in one group that has been monitored for the last 2 years, none of their families, their wives or sexual partners have caught the virus.
A mighty contribution lasting just over 5 years, with her final regular Radio 1 show being on December the 29th, 1987.
I do feel very privileged to have been at Radio 1 when there was a lot more freedom in terms of music playlists. You know, I could actually go in to my producer and go, I've heard this band and I think they're brilliant, blah, 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 and he'd book them for a session. He'd just trust me. As I did him, if he said to me, I found something that I like, I completely trusted him as well. And, you know, that you could get very excited about bands. You could really, really promote them. I remember, you know, promoting the Cult so much because I loved the Cult. And one of the Cult's mothers, Billy Duffy's mother, sent me a card saying, thank you for everything you've done for my boy. You know, pushing the Smiths, pushing the Bunnymen, just so many. You know, bands that I was very proud to be able to play.
Janis returned to national radio in the late 1990s, deservedly becoming an even bigger fixture on BBC Radio 2, and more recently presenting her celebrated evening show on BBC Radio Wales. This has been a My Radio 1 tribute to the great Janis Long. I'm Sean Tilley. Thanks for listening.